Graham, and this podcast is the home ec class you wish you'd been offered.
We're two moms who've been real life best friends for more than two decades. We're trying to create gracious homes that are welcoming, but also functional, all while dealing with real life schedules, budgets, and children.
Stick with us and we'll share and show what we know, what we've learned, where we've messed up, and how to fix it. For everything we can't make up, we'll bring in the best experts we can find. You're listening to Welcome Home.
Today on Welcome Home, it's almost Halloween and we are so here for it. We're welcoming the Green Witches to the podcast. Mother-daughter duo Eris and Velia Urban are here to talk about history from the often silenced female perspective. They'll give us the real story of witches and some modern-day potions to aid in health and beauty. Bananas might be the next Botox.
Plus, the truth about brooms, the Ugg boots of menstruation, and why colonial sleeping habits sound a bit like a freshman dorm. All that and more on this week's episode of Welcome Home.
Welcome home, Graham.
There is so much pressure on this one. Welcome home, Kirsten. And welcome back to our audience who we have not seen or heard from or spoken to in, what, 18 months?
18 months.
It's been a while.
Graham and I made the executive decision that we were non-essential workers. I don't seem to dispute that fact. No, just kidding. Yes. So many of you reached out to us and it was so touching.
And our heart is here and we love this. And let's be honest, it comes naturally to us. So.
No, let's be honest. Any normal person would have taken 18 months off and come back with a long, like, let's explain, let's do a wrap up. But what did
Kirsten wanted to. You totally
wanted to. I wanted to, because again, normal person.
We're like, forget
Graham
this.
Graham's like, I got us some witches. I would talk about us, but it's Halloween. And we all know Graham loves her Halloween.
I went straight to the source. I went to the Salem Witch Museum because I knew if I was going to stage a comeback, it couldn't just be anywhere. I had to go to the spookiest place I could think of. And who was headlining but mother-daughter duo, Velia and Eris Urban. And they are going to speak to us today about all things colonial, witchcraft, women.
It was fascinating. It was truly fascinating.
It was wonderful. We'll discuss where we've been in a subsequent episode.
Well, no, can we do like a quick, like 5 minute wrap up?
Sure. Okay. Let's say.
So Graham, where are you podcasting from?
Still in my closet, still in my son's closet. Nothing has changed except actually it's a little harder to get up from the floor.
Yeah. We were talking about the aches and pains of old age. Okay.
So I bet there's a potion for that, Kirsten.
There's totally a potion.
Why didn't we ask her about we're going to learn some potions. There's actually some DIY potions in our, we'll post some.
Oh, we know what we should do. You know what we should do? We should, well, let's wait 1 second. We should do like a, well, oh my gosh, these are the things real podcasters would have thought of before. We should do like a Welcome Home podcast Zoom class with them where they like custom design a course for people who want to know the things we want to know.
Oh my gosh, where I was thinking they should have made a custom potion. Like what is it? What's the word everyone's always saying? A curated potion for our curated, episode?
A curated handcrafted potion.
Yeah, okay, we Graham. Need a Welcome Home Halloween potion.
Okay. So you did briefly bring up that we have an intern and we do.
We have an intern. Shout out to Mary Alice Russell.
Hi, Mary Alice. So we are so excited to have someone helping us with the podcast, which feels very professional. We're so grateful for her.
Do we want to say that we may have come back stronger than ever?
I think that's a little presumptuous.
It's super presumptuous. Let's not presume.
I mean, we're still behind the mic, so I'm going to take it slow. Okay. Well,
we have a great lineup of episodes coming down the pipe. We're going to be talking to lots of interesting thought leaders, tastemakers, people of the day. So we decided that we want you to hear from the best of the best. Remember that tagline we have, we'll bring in the best experts we can find. That's what we're really leading with these next few weeks. We thought we'd bring you some good experts.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Grim, do you want to ask me where I am?
Where are you? Oh, yeah, Kirsten, where are you?
So I'm in my basement because I have a basement now. Because I live on the East Coast. I'm a New Englander and I have embraced it.
Oh, and Kirsten wants to really embrace our differences too. Of now she lives in the north. I live in, this was a big thing for her, so that we can chat with you, which is ironic because let's be honest, we're very similar in many ways, but we're going to play up our differences for you all.
Well, you like vests with sleeves and I like vest without sleeves.
I don't like vests with sleeves.
Yes, I'm still so troubled. So Graham came to town to visit me. So I've moved to Connecticut. That's my big update. And I have a basement. And hopefully the audio is good from the basement. But anyway, Graham comes to visit me in Connecticut. And we go to this store and there's this down vest that has little like cap sleeves. And I said,
it's like the hottest thing. Cap sleeves.
It's totally the hottest thing. She's completely right. It's everywhere. But I said, you look like you're a space traveler. And she said, no, you're wrong. And I was like, her.
But so but I used my self-confidence and I bought it anyway, even when your best friend advises against it.
And I've seen so many people wearing them. So I understand, like, this is going to be Birkenstocks 2.0. I'm going to be like, this is crazy.
And but the problem with me is I know I'm going to be, no, but I'm still going to be wearing mine 15 years down the road. That's where I separate from like the rest of mankind. It's like where other people see short sleeve, cap sleeve vest is like a flash in the pan. I'm going to carry mine for, I think it's like, it has staying power. I see the functionality in the trend. And when I see functionality in a trend, that means it has staying power.
I'm trying to think. We have missed so much. I mean, obviously we've missed everything years. That's happened in the world and COVID and all of that. We're going to do a COVID wrap up show too, by the way.
This is a lighthearted show. We're going to entertain you.
But I want to do how we did the Coroni Awards. I want to do a wrap up of like what was good about COVID, what was bad about COVID, what we learned.
Will do that. Although I'll give you a credit. I don't know if you went back and listened to the Coroni Awards, which I think we did right as coronavirus basically was starting and everything was shutting down. And I was cringing before I pushed play because I was just trying to refresh myself on what we had been doing. We actually did not sound like complete jackasses, Kirsten. If you go back and listen to it, especially in those dark, trying times when everyone was very scared, we did not say anything that I particularly regret or that was very off point or made us sound completely tone deaf.
Okay. Well, forget about that. Forget about the Corona episode. I mean, forget about, it's just your back. I just got to dig into it right now because now it's on my mind. You know what was my biggest COVID? Well, I have so many COVID regrets. One is like, I should have done the thing where you stop using shampoo for a month. Have you heard about this?
Yes. You wanted to try that, but then you
get smelly.
I really want
to try it, but I know, right? But it didn't matter because I know where to go. And now I'm back to a stage in life where it's like, oh, I can't not wash my hair for a month. But
what Kirsten's getting at, because she's not explaining, is if you don't use shampoo for a month, allegedly your hair gets clean all of a sudden.
Yeah, you have to go through like a disgusting, greasy phase where your hair looks terrible and you don't want to go anywhere. But like, it didn't matter back then.
Isn't what they say about keto too, of like, if you don't eat for so long, then you go through the bad breath stage and then all of a sudden your breath gets good again.
Right. This is my point. Like, I should have done like a weird cleanse thing that like is totally unsustainable. If you have any sort of social life, anything that did not require a social life, I should have done that stuff, but
we
I didn't
know.
I just like watched TV. I didn't do anything good, but I also want to say I bought one of those aftermarket bidets.
There's not really a for market bidet. I don't understand why you need it.
Yes, because if you were like building a new house and you were like, put a bidet in.
Nobody's putting a bidet in anymore.
Or if you bought a house that was like glamorous 90s living, that was very hot in the 90s. But anyhow, I bought an aftermarket bidet attachment and it did not work. And they also made it sound, I mean, I don't
know. Oh, that was during the toilet paper shortage.
And here's the thing. One, I bought it. And then after I bought it, they were like, oh, you know, there's a wait list. And I'm like, of course there's a wait list. There's a wait list for toilet paper. Why do you think I needed a bidet to begin with?
Well, you know, anyway, we actually have a bidet that works.
I know
that
we've never used. Listen, we have don't potted brag plants. About your bidet. This is, I think, how we left things off was you were bragging about your bidet.
And it was my safety pull cord because I knew that if the toilet paper thing ran out, I kept looking at it like, am I going to have to fire you up?
I know, but my pull cord was a garden hose, Graham. So like, I don't want to hear you complaining about maybe using your bidet when it was dire over at our house. So anyhow, I bought this and it said also, one, your bathroom has to be set up in such a way where the sink is right next to the toilet or like you can't get the plumbing over. So that was my first problem. And then the second problem was that they, just because they made a really cool hip video on YouTube that you could watch that showed you how to do it, a plumber I am not. And so I flooded my bathroom. Like this stupid experiment that I also moved across the country because I didn't want the new owners of my house to get my bidet that I waited for. Anyway, if anyone wants a bidet, if you're willing to pay for the shipping, I will send it to you free of charge.
Doesn't sound like a bidet. Sounds like a hose attachment. Nobody wants that. I'm very excited about today's interview. I say, let's get to it and give the people what they want. You feel good about that?
Again, a little presumptuous.
Well, I think they want to hear from.
They want to hear from the Green Witches. Yes, I give them. Okay. Let's give them what they want. You guys are going to actually enjoy this. Super fascinating.
It's a Halloween spooktacular.
Spooktacular.
It's up there. Okay, wait,
hold on.
What are
you going to be for Halloween this year?
Quick, I can't say because it has. Well, I don't want anyone to hear because I have actually a bunch of Halloween parties this year, and I don't want anyone to know. But I'll tell you retrospectively. How about that?
Okay.
What was I going to say?
I was an Amazon delivery guy last year.
Oh, that's what my dog is going as, actually.
Graham got a dog. We got a puppy. We buried the lead. Graham got a dog. And I got two goldfish. And I think they're dying right now.
Yeah. I feel like everyone in America got a dog. So that's not that exciting.
That's true.
Anyway. All right. Eris and Velia Urban, the grounded good wives or good witches, the green witches. Take it away. Welcome home. We are so excited today to welcome Eris and Velia from The Grounded Good Wife. I found this mother-daughter duo through my Halloween research because I know our audience expects like Halloween to be outstanding. So my first thought was I need to go to the Salem Witch Museum and see what those guys are cooking up. And of course, their headline show-stopping speaker for the Halloween season of 2021 was The Grounded Good Wife. And y'all are about, I said y'all because I've totally assimilated to Alabama, are doing a speech, which is so fascinating, called, and you do this all over the country, but called, do you want to explain it? How about I just kick it off to you? Both of you.
Yes, it's called The Not So Good Life of the Colonial Good Wife. And it really was the start. Eris and I were very well known now for our Herstory Unsanitized presentations. And that was the presentation that really kind of launched the whole of Grounded Good Wife. So that's the title.
Well, wait, should we start there then? Because that is fascinating as well.
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you tell our listeners, what is the unsanitized history?
Okay, Eris, why don't you explain that part? Herstory Unsanitized, what do we call that?
So the point of that is that if you watch pretty much any kind of historical TV show or any kind of movie that involves history, you see all this really violent stuff, like people being decapitated and disemboweled and tortured. There's nothing about like menstruation, chamber pots, poopy babies, birth control, none of that like everyday stuff. So it's like, why is it fine to see all that super violent stuff, but not the, you know, normal everyday things.
Right. And as I was originally a high school English and history teacher. So of course, I've always been a history nut. And I assume everybody loved history. But then one day Eris said, well, what did you say?
I mean, to me in school, I thought history was always a very boring class because it's just about like the dates and like facts. It's nothing you can really connect with. So I was never a big fan.
So our thing is that really like history and pretty much everything in life should be fun. So I think a hallmark of what we do is we call it stealth learning. So we kind of sneak in the educational stuff while people are laughing and grimacing and wincing. And that's kind of what we're getting known for.
Well, and you make a wonderful point. So our audience is about 98% female from all over. And I was thinking about this when I was listening, you know, researching your, the Her Story, the whole topic. And I remember a long time ago seeing there was this, I want to say it was a Dove commercial, but I'm not even sure, which is terrible because probably they want you to remember the advertiser. And it got a ton of national headlines because it was a woman right after giving birth. And she was kind of hobbling to the bathroom back and forth, you know, and it was a very real visceral portrayal of what it was probably like, you know, 24, 36 hours after giving birth. And I remember that that caused such a national sensation, like how dare they do a commercial like that on television, you know, and of course that's come through the ages, you know, when they first did a bra commercial or they first did a tampon commercial or anything along those lines. But the fact that, right, we watch Squid Games right now, or everyone watches Squid Games with reckless abandon. And yet, heaven forbid, we talk about, you know, some of these topics that you all mentioned that women had to go through hundreds of years ago and are still going through today.
And I think that's one thing that we actually kind of talk about. You know, nowadays, women, you're supposed to give birth, you know, go into labor, give birth, and then just like boing happily right back into life. Where I think the only thing colonial women had over us is that they had this thing called the lying in period. So what that was, for 3 to 4 weeks after you had your baby, your friends and your neighbors, they would come over and they would do your chores for you and take care of your kids. So I think back then, at least the women had like 3 to 4 weeks to get back onto their feet, compared to now where, you know, very often women are back at work after 3 to 4 weeks.
Right. So that kicked out of the hospital in 48 hours, you know?
Right, exactly, exactly, right. So that was
actually— So tell us more. Can we just dive in?
Sure. Well, I think the thing that people always want to know about is menstruation, because that's always what we start with first. So you want to hear how they handle menstruation?
Absolutely.
Okay. So
it actually totally creeps me out, but I need to get over it.
I was going to say, absolutely. Graham does not turn down money, and she turned down a sponsor because they were an organic tampon, and Graham said, I can't say the word tampon on air.
Don't
say that. Oh, man, I don't know if our talk would be for you.
It's very much. I love this. I think it's fascinating what you're talking
about. Okay, so sometimes they would use cheesecloth that was stuffed with either milkweed fluff or moss. And actually they kind of stole that whole idea from Native Americans. But the most common thing is that they would take a hunk of sheepskin, they would cut it to the right size, then they put the fur side up against their crotch and just kind of tuck it in place. And then I would say, like, just go about their day. And then they'd boil these things and reuse them over and over and over again. And what I always say, what I love about history, is a whole full circle aspect of things. And we teach another class. We don't talk about the sanitary napkin things. The girls in Africa. Okay, you're just pointing to me. So what I think the whole full circle aspect of history that I love is how things just repeat themselves. And now so many women today, they don't want to use, you know, tampons or those pads that have all the creepy chemicals in them, like the sodium polyacrylate. So a lot of women today are using those reusable, washable tampons and pads. So I just love the whole full circle aspect of it all, that so many women are now doing what our colonial foremothers practice. Wow.
That's fascinating. So they took sheepskin?
Sheepskin, yep.
So is it weird that I'm picturing the Uggs of pads? Is that correct? Or
picturing what? Uggs? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Uggs. No one ever said that before, but yeah, picture an Ugg up against your crotch.
Yeah, I don't know really how it would stay there, but I guess they say it did.
They just kind of tucked. And then I think you all know that nobody wore underwear.
There was a whole slits in the underwear, right? So how did that work out?
Which had the slits? Originally they didn't wear any underwear at all, women or men.
So wait, when did underwear become a thing?
Not until about the probably about the 1800s, and it was crotchless underwear until about the end of World War I. So that was that. And you want to hear the reason for that?
Yes.
Yes.
So underwear was crotchless. Primarily because the heavy woolen clothing of the day, whether the Victorian era or the colonial era, just the skirts alone could weigh up to 40 pounds. So can you imagine, going out to an outhouse or squatting over a chamber pot while you pulled up your 40 pounds of skirts and then pull down your underwear? Pretty much, it was pretty impossible to do that. And the other theory is that men preferred it that way because it was easier to have sex with a woman if she wasn't wearing underwear. So I'll just leave those two little fun facts right there.
Something to chew on.
Okay. While we're on the topic of underwear, let's go upwards a little bit to corsets or corselets.
Corsets. Yep. So you want to talk about?
Okay. I'm sorry. You don't know this about me. I am legendary for mispronouncing everything.
Although she was a news anchor, which we always find to be very interesting.
What's the other thing I said, Graham, yesterday when I said she tore her ACLU? And you said she tore her ACL, Kirsten, not her ACLU. Okay, I apologize. So,
well, good thing that you probably had a teleprompter and they probably did things phonetically for you. So that was probably pretty good.
She's come way light years since then.
Not really. Okay, so suffragettes and corsets. Let's talk about that. Suffragettes and corsets.
So want to say the purpose of that, how that talk came to be?
Yeah.
That came from like our research about corsets.
So corsets said they've been worn throughout history. So, you know, going back to the Puritan era, those corsets, they were kind of meant just to flatten your boobs. But then the ones in the Victorian era are the ones that really everybody knows so much about. So those really what we, here's another thing I should mention, that every time Eris and I do research and we come across something where a woman is either demeaned or she's seen as a sex object, we say one word. What's the word, Eris?
Blech.
Blech, right.
So, blech.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. A lot of blessing in our talks. So originally, women, well, back in the Victorian era, they wore corsets because they thought they'd be medically beneficial and help support a woman's weak body. And at that point in our talk—
Everybody, blech. Blech.
But anyway, those Victorian corsets, they enabled women to achieve the desired 17 to 22 inch waist.
And if you look on a ruler, that's like really, really tiny.
That's messed up. That's like you have to have a rib removed.
Some women got themselves down to a 12, 13, or 14 inch waist. So,
and
with the corsets?
Yes. Yes.
And wait, I have a question though. Is that like when I'm wearing my Spanx, I'm X inches, when I'm not, or does this like permanently change your body?
No, it's
well, that's a good question. Aristotle talks about that. It does serious damage to your body.
Yeah, I think when you took it off, you get like a little bit bigger, but I think it would totally reshape your body and cause this crazy organ damage.
Oh. Like,
one account from a woman in 1895 was at a dentist's office getting a tooth pulled, and she died in the dentist chair. And then when they did the autopsy, they found that her liver was almost in like two separate pieces. With just
thin chin. Oh my gosh. Is there a word for when you go, but it's like so far that you feel a little bit icky?
I mean, way past blech. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like into, you can't see me, but it's a real bad look. Okay. Then let's move up a little bit more then to the bra. Explain the bra. I'm done with the corsets.
Okay, the bra. So that actually, we came up with a whole talk called Booby Trapped, the History of the Bra, because that one came to be because I never thought about this until we thought about this, is that what corsets did, they pushed your boobs up from below, so there was nothing lifting your boobs up from above until bras were finally invented. So you want to talk about bras, Alers?
So they've been around for, I mean, like in the way that we know them, not super long, but in history, they've been around for a long time. I would say the most original ones were made out of, were they Minoan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're from Minoan times. They're made out of wool actually. And they're this really long band that you like kind of like wrapped around your chest. And that sounds pretty.
Right. And if you were a large breasted woman like me in ancient Rome, that was considered like ew, like small boobs were much more desirable in ancient Rome. So
you're out of luck.
I would not have been a popular woman in ancient Rome.
Oh, I bet you would have.
Well, maybe, but not maybe for my personality, but not my boobs.
That's great.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Gosh, this is making me a little bit annoyed, to be honest with you.
That's really the whole point of a lot of our talks, that, you know, in the past, men kind of did a lot of this to women, but today so many women, they're doing it to themselves. Like for instance, one of you mentioned Spanx, and we talk about Spanx in one of our talks. And did you know that the organ damage done by Victorian corsets, a lot of women who wear Spanx on a regular basis today, they're getting very early organ damage. And that's a brand new study we found from 2019. So, I mean, that's
no
pretty,
way.
Yeah, pretty scary. You know, if you wear it once in a while to a wedding, you're okay. But women who wear them on a regular basis, like you better be careful because you might wind up with some big problems.
Wow, that's frightening and good to know. Yeah. Okay, so I want to move on. I love this. Let's move on to the your other large talk, the not so good life of the colonial wife.
Yeah.
Because, so we've talked about this before we went on air, but I just moved to Connecticut, and coming from Arizona, like, I'm obsessed with this history. It is such a charming place to live, for especially for someone who grew up in the last continental U.S. state, to get to be in a place that, you know, there's a street here named Redcoat Pass, and there's Old Kings Highway, and you just feel like the history is all around you. And it's a really cool thing for someone like me, who's not from this, not exposed to it all the time. So I feel like I'm very immersed right now in this colonial age.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me, what am I missing? What am I missing besides the charm of the cobblestone streets?
Well, you're missing a lot of the negative things also, because we always lived in Connecticut, and we just moved out of a 1770 farmhouse. So actually, I've always been fascinated with history, but it was living in that colonial farmhouse. Actually, what happened was, during Hurricane Irene, we wound up not having power for 10 days.
Oh, I remember that. My parents had the same thing.
Got a feel for what it was like. But some of the bad things were, did you know that, of course, everyone used chamber pots, and houses were so cold that the urine left in chamber pots would freeze overnight. So we're not talking Siberia. We're talking in New England. That's how cold houses were.
Yep. Even with all the fires on it and everything.
Right, exactly. So it was bad. And if you, like, we heated our house with a wood stove, you know, back in Connecticut, but what people had, if people would go through, what was it? 60 cords of wood, because you kept your fire going at all times, but 60 cords of wood. We used to burn 8 cords of wood, and we thought we'd have a heart attack, you know, stacking all that wood, but 60 cords of wood.
And plus, you have to somehow get those trees and chop it down, and, you know, do all the processing for that. So that's a lot of work.
Right. So men were chopping wood all the time. And so what were the hours they kept? What time were people waking up and going to bed back then?
Actually, there's something, this is kind of funny. There was something that they called two sleeps, which I'd never heard of before. So, you know, people would go to bed when it got to be dark, and then they would wake up, I think it was sometime around like 11 o'clock. This just cracked me up. They would wake up at 11 o'clock. And first of all, they would go to bed, you know, like when it gets dark, once it gets dark, 5 o'clock, something like that. They'd go to bed at 5 o'clock. They'd wake up at about 11 o'clock, and they called that first sleep. Then at 11 o'clock, they would then sometimes, well, first of all, they said then that was the best time to have sex, because you could conceive a child the best time at that point. But very often people would get up, they would go out into their barn and hook up their carriages. Then they'd go to someone's house and go visit for a while. Then they'd come back to their house, and they'd go back to sleep at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and then wake up when the sun came up. So that two-sleep thing, but that just kind of cracked me up. I'd never heard about that.
Well, wait, doesn't that sound a little bit European?
I feel it sounds like college.
Yeah, maybe you're right. We realized there are a couple of reasons for that.
Go to sleep, wake up, go to a party. Maybe you hook up with someone.
Have some sex. Yeah. Yes. No, but there's two reasons for that. It's because, one thing, the nights were just so long, and you get kind of boring. You can't sleep all the time. But also, having a wood stove, we realized that it's pretty hard to keep a fireplace going all night long. So I think they'd get up and they'd, like, you know, stoke the fire so they'd have a little bit of warmth in the house. But the two sleep thing was really, really common. Yeah.
When I'd like to go to somebody else's house to enjoy their firewood. I mean,
Graham, I'll see you. I'm going to come over at 2 a.m. We're going to chop some firewood, then I'm going to go back for sleep too.
All right. So tell us a little more. Oh, sorry, yeah. Graham. Keep saying you touched upon birth control, childbirth, or can we touch upon that a little bit?
We didn't touch upon birth control. We just talked about menstruation.
Birth control, let's see. What's some of those popular things?
The sea sponges.
Yeah, they used, they used sea sponges. Quinine. But the most common thing they would take, they would take crocodile poop and they would, what they mix with honey, and they would put it in the vagina to help prevent pregnancy. So crocodile poop and honey.
Hold on. How are the colonial, coming from the Northeast, there have not been much proximity to crocodiles.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That's the first thing that I wondered. And then actually it was our son. He lives in Puerto Rico. He heard me do one of our talks, and he said, you know, mom, you have to stop and think that to the colonists, crocodile poop was this like fantastical thing. And, you know, they like what we consider a unicorn or whatever. What was I going to say?
Like the Loch Ness Monster, something just very magical.
Right. So like the crocodile poop had nothing really to do with it. It was just that it was this dry powder that when it mixed with honey, then they put it in the vagina. It acted kind of as a diaphragm sort of thing. But a lot of people have said, this is another one of these blech things, that you probably smelled so bad that your husband didn't come anywhere near you. So it was a pretty effective contraceptive.
There. Yeah. So it's like you're making a mud pie per se.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Mud pie. Okay. But it wasn't made out of actual crocodile dung.
Yes, it was.
It was.
Where are they finding the crocodiles? That's what I'm asking.
They pretty much get anything, you know, not in the very early colonial era, but you know, by the time we had harbors and you know, ports, they were sure they were transporting everything. Yes.
Okay. Cool.
Can you imagine someone tracing their family tree and realizing their ancestors were like the crocodile poop supplier?
Suppliers, yeah. You know, one thing we always say that, you know, the colonial period, it goes from 1602 to 1781. So I think sometimes think, you know, what was going on here, or I shouldn't say there, what was going on at home in 1602, it wasn't necessarily happening in 1781, because that's like 174 years. Like in history, that's a really, really big period. So, you know, the beginning was different than the end.
They had some other weird things for birth control, though. They would like turn the wheel of a grain mill backwards at midnight. They would like toss seeds in a river.
Well, you're up. You're up for second sleep, so you've got nothing to do. Turn that mill backwards.
I like they used to hang rabbit poop tied in mule's hide over their bed. So they were desperate. And that's not, well, that leading up to you said about childbirth. So it's estimated that somewhere between 25 and 50% of women died in childbirth. And since
the thing, it's so horrific. Like you watch these recreation movies and you see, and they always portray women as, oh, I just can't wait to get pregnant, blah, blah, blah. I would think I would have been absolutely out of my mind scared. Yeah, if you're seeing, you know, two out of your four friends dying every time they did this and you had no control over it.
No. And that's it. Like women were pregnant somewhere between 8 and 10 times. So there was a pretty good chance something bad was going to happen to you. And what are the numbers about kids' survival? Aaron, do you remember that? Like 4 out of 10 children
didn't survive the first year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And very often they didn't even name kids until they were 24 months old, because there's such a high chance that the kid wasn't going to survive. So, you know, we always say like women have a long way to go, but man, we have come an awful long way. And, you know, just be thankful you're alive. As bad as things might be right now, be glad you're alive in 2021.
Very good point. Absolutely. This is some spooky stuff. This is some Halloween spooky stuff.
Okay. Well, Graham, okay. You don't know this about Graham since you guys just met, but Graham is a little bit weird in her love of Halloween.
It's a wonderful love.
No, she's obsessed. It's very, anyway. So I know you guys have on your website, if the broom fits, Halloween and the history of witches. So in honor of it being October, this is going to come out right before Halloween. We need to hear about the witches.
Okay, so should we get right to the broom part?
You tell us everything you know, because you're making Graham's day right now.
Okay, I have
anything you want to say. Do you also understand how special you two women are? We have not done a podcast in a year and a half, and you're our triumphant return. We're coming back. You know how you go to a concert, like a rock star just comes out and plays their first song without saying like, hey, miss us for the past X number of time, where have we been hiding? Nope. We just still decided to lead with Eris and Velia, just like the way a famous rock star would come out. So I hope you're feeling the moment.
Wow. I hope we're living up to the, up to the hype here. This is
very much. Okay. Hit it.
One of the points for our if the broom fits talk was like, how do the nice, because witches used to be seen as this like nice, benevolent, you know, healer kind of woman. How did that change into her becoming this like malevolent, kind of scary, creepy woman? So we talk about that.
Yeah. A lot of it really is because women began, you know, taking their power. So that's how that happened. But we really wondered, you know, what's up with witches and brooms and flying? So how about I'll do the broom part, you do the flying part.
All right. How about you do all that? No. It's like, it's a pretty ridiculous explanation.
Here's the deal. So there used to be, first of all, there are different herbs that are hallucinogenic herbs. You want to talk about some of them?
Yeah, so there's tropane alkaloids in some herbs. Like
hold on, writing this down.
Okay. So in like belladonna, hellebore, henbane, jimson weed, and they are all super duper poisonous herbs if you don't know what you're doing, so please do not use them.
They
do have some pretty powerful properties if you do know what you're doing, but again, don't use them.
No, don't use them
unless you want to die, right? Okay?
Yes. So there used to be this thing called witch's ointment. So we did a lot of research on this, and we're putting an hour long talk down to condensing it here. But what these women used to do, they used to make a witch's ointment out of these herbs. And then, as Eris said, if you would take these herbs internally, you would either be dead or pretty close to dead. But they figured out, in order to get the hallucinogenic, high off of it, they would anoint these things through your mucous membranes. So they would do it through their armpits, or the fastest way was through your vagina or through your rear end. So what they would do, I wish I could see your faces right now. What they would do, they would
take imagine.
Yes. They would take this ointment and then they'd rub it all over a broom. Then they didn't put the broom inside them, which is what some people think. They would go, they would straddle the broom. You picture, the way witches, we think of witches riding around in the sky. And then they would get this hallucinogenic high because this witch's ointment was touching their vagina and touching their rear end.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. So then we were wondering that, okay, so that's how they got, the buzz off the hallucinogenic.
You think you could just put it on? Like, why did they need the broom portion? But anyway.
Because, Grim, they had to have two access points.
Who am I? But I mean, like, I feel like they could have figured that out. Keep going. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
So then we wondered, okay, what's up with, then how did, okay, so that's the witches like kind of walking around on their brooms. But then we wondered what's up with the flying parts. Where should you explain that part?
So we found this account from this guy named Gustav Schenk, who in 1966, he was like, okay, I want to feel like what these tropane alkaloids feel like when they, you put them topically on your body. So he came up with this whole like description of how he felt once he did it. And he said he felt like his kind of like his body and his like mind were separating, and he felt like he was flying and felt like he was like in the clouds, like by the rivers, like all this stuff. So.
Oh, so he was describing his high from his broomstick experience.
So, if anybody smeared these hallucinogenic herbs on them, they would have the feeling of flying. You didn't have to be a witch for it to happen. It would happen to you guys if you did it too. So, but what it really was, and then that whole thing, all these male artists of the day, we're talking about the 1500s, 1400s, they started doing these really I would say insulting engravings and paintings of women. And like Eris and I, we had no idea these paintings were out there, but they show naked women like straddling a giant penis, or like straddling a flying penis, because men were really upset that women were kind of trying to take their power, and they're trying to use their power. So really that's, we're condensing an hour long talk into something small, but it really was kind of about that say, Eris, what you say, if you were a woman who,
like, because throughout history, there have always been like free thinking, independent, kind of cool women. And we've always been seen as a threat.
So this was their way to kind of, squelch those women. And that's, same thing with all the witch trials. Those were all women. Like we always say, there were like examples. Who were the witches?
Like single women, like menopausal women, widowed women. Like we would have been, we're kind of like weird. So we would have been.
And you too. You guys would have been gone.
Us too. We would have been
anybody
gone.
Anybody who was like an open-minded free thinker, you would have been gone, or you would have been at least shunned by society. So. Yeah, that's kind of the gist of that talk. And how sad it, that the portrayal of witches became that way. Because as Eris said, they were just the healing women. They were the wise women, but they become these like, cackling hags. And, it's men, like with so many things, it's men that were responsible for that portrayal of them.
And it's unfortunately still a thing today where women and men are being accused of witchcraft and killed, like in huge numbers, unfortunately.
Where is this happening?
No, it totally happens. It actually still happens in Africa. It very much happens.
From between 1960 and 2000, 40,000 primarily women were killed in Tanzania. Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal. I remember when we lived in Africa briefly, the newspapers, the national newspapers, would take out ads basically saying, don't go. I mean, especially there's also healing kind of medicine men as well. Mm-hmm. But no, that's still a very active part of certain cultures.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Very much
to denounce women and potentially men, but I don't think you really get punished for it.
But men
for witchcraft.
Also. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bad stuff.
Well, what's really cool about you guys, to kind of bridge the gap between history and current, you guys are free thinkers. You use some remedies that are maybe outside the mainstream, but effective and awesome. So tell us what would be the you know, we're not at one of your seminars. We're not at one of your workshops. Although, can our listeners go to your workshop? That's my first question. Do you guys have anything virtual? Because we have listeners all over the world. And then secondly, for those who just want a taste of it, like, what is the easiest way to like, what is the easiest way to like dip your toe in the water of these things, of making your own remedies, of herbs and sort of natural remedies? Like, what is your first, what's the gateway drug?
What was your first potion? Potion 101. Like, what do you potion start 101, with?
Well, I guess it's hard for us to say because like I grew up, my mother was like a real, you know, pioneer of this stuff. So I grew up this way. Eris has always lived this way. But I think one of the first classes that we offered was something called fire cider. Eris, you want to talk about fire cider?
Yeah, so fire cider is considered like the ultimate herbal cold and flu remedy. It's apple cider vinegar with garlic and onions and horseradish and a bunch of other herbs. And it's great if you feel like you're getting sick, you know, you get that like, you know, tickly sore throat thing or start getting a cough, you take some fire cider and it just like knocks it out of you. Mm-hmm. Or you can just take it every day just as a preventative.
A hallmark of what we do is that we, like, for instance, you can buy fire cider in grocery store, but a four ounce bottle is $24.99, where we're like, are you kidding me? Like, it's vinegar, horseradish, garlic, and a bunch of herbs. $24.99, that's crazy. So our thing is, what we try to do, we don't sell things, but we teach people how to make their own herbal and holistic remedies. Because we just, our thing is, don't pay that kind of money. And, you know, also when it comes to like our holistic, you know, beauty kind of things, like, you know, you can make your own shampoo. You can, you know, there's no reason to buy things that are chemical filled. And there's no reason to pay those crazy prices. Like, we teach people just how to do it for themselves.
Yeah, we teach virtual classes pretty much at least once a day. And our schedule is on our website, which is groundedgoodwife.com.
And you guys need to all go to this website. It's amazing. I have had so much fun on this website. You guys are hilarious and it's very informative. And so, really,
well, I was thinking, because you're very tongue in cheek with a lot of, what was the thing? Let's give them something to pumpkin. What was it about the pumpkin, Kirsten?
Let's give them pumpkin to talk about.
Pumpkin to talk about. But I was thinking,
wait, what is pumpkin to talk about, since we are in October in the pumpkin? What is give them to pumpkin to talk about?
That's a class where we teach how to make two like natural beauty recipes, maple pumpkin sugar scrub and a banana yogurt, like facial mask kind of thing.
And that whole thing is because like, you know, the people buy masks and sugar scrubs in the store. It's like crazy. First of all, they have chemicals in them and people forget that, you know, your skin is your most porous organ. And if you put it on your skin, it's going in your body. So we just teach people how to do it themselves because they're really, really effective. And they're not just like, oh yes, pumpkin. Oh yeah, yogurt. Oh yeah, bananas. They all have really, really good beneficial ingredients in them.
Not like you're trying to sell it to the masses, but that would be really good for a little girl's birthday party. Like if a mom wanted to Zoom with you two and you could teach a bunch of little girls how to make like, you know, those two masks.
I think maybe a banana is sometimes referred to as nature's Botox.
Yes. It's great.
And also like, this is not like a sales trap, but we just released our second book called Dare to Be a Green Witch. And we have tons of recipes in there that are good for like, if you've never made an herbal recipe ever in your life, there's stuff in there for you. Or if you're a little more advanced, there's stuff in there for you. So it's everything from like beauty stuff to kombucha and kimchi and perfume.
That's how would I learn how to like harm my enemies? Do you have anything in there in the book that would like, I mean, are we doing anything like that? Or are we just
That's one thing we should talk about because we consider ourselves green witches. Say what you think of green witch or what we think of green witches.
So green witches like value and consult the earth and trees and plants and stones for their healing properties. Mm-hmm. And for us, it's like pretty much living a holistic lifestyle and being respectful of Mother Nature and the environment.
We don't use any kind of allopathic doctors or prescriptions, nothing like that. But a lot of people have said, not a lot of people, some people said that we're not real green witches because we don't practice spells and we don't talk to fairies. But like, there is no dictionary definition of what a green witch is. You know, like if you want to practice spells, you want to talk to fairies, you know, go ahead, but we don't do that. And I think our big thing is, you know, we lead a totally holistic life, but we like to think of it as a big swimming pool. You know, Eris and I, our whole family, we're in the deep end of the pool. We do nothing allopathic. But if you just want to go in the little kitty end of the pool and maybe experiment with elderberry syrup or making your own shampoo, you know, that's totally fine too. You can go as deep as you want into the pool. The pool is big enough for everybody. And we like to welcome everybody to our coven where we don't speak to fairies.
Yes. And well, and I love it. And Graham, you guys are very.
Graham would like to use as many chemicals as possible while also cursing her enemies. Do you have a tool for that?
What a combo.
Well,
no, sorry. That sounds terrible. I think what you guys are doing is fascinating. I love
amazing.
It.
And I'm just kidding. Wonderful. I'm kidding.
And we love what you're doing. And yeah, we're very open.
I'm going to get that book. That sounds amazing.
Cool.
Dare to be a Green Witch. No, that sounds amazing.
I just do have a question because you're making me think of the M. Night. And I apologize. You've just piqued my interest. So I just have to dive further because you're saying that. So it reminds me of that M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Village, right? So if someone in your family got a major, major, major something or other, how would you treat that? Do you remember that did you ever see that movie?
No, but I know what you're talking about.
It's a fascinating movie.
We think there's a place for allopathic medicine, let's just say if you're in a horrific car accident, but pretty much everything, and that's what we try to, the point we get across, you know, we have diarrhea, we throw up, we get sore throats, mm-hmm. we get headaches. Eris had West Nile virus. Jim, mm-hmm. my husband, Eris's father, he had Lyme. We just choose to treat it all holistically, you know, herbally, yeah. holistically. And
yeah. You really can.
We can. And we've had things, we have a naturopath, of course, mm-hmm. which we hardly ever go to. But we've had Eris had West Nile virus documented with a blood test. We got rid of it when infectious disease guy said we couldn't. Documented with a blood test. We just choose to get rid of that stuff without using prescriptions.
But so you're basically additionally, like way down the line, being able to make something with antibiotic properties.
Oh yeah. There's tons of herbs.
See, but we're new to this. So this, you know,
would it be bad to talk about COVID? Would it be bad to talk about people who might be afraid and what their immunization up? Like, what do you recommend to kind of keep yourself just, you know, the natural sort of immunization boosting?
There's a lot you can do just like generically to keep your immune system up, like no matter against any kind of virus, bacteria, whatever, like elderberry syrup, fire cider, which we already talked about. There's tons of antiviral herbs.
We teach quite a few workshops on that. Like for instance, we don't believe in the vaccine, which maybe is going to turn off some of your listeners, but that's how it is. But like same, we don't even use hand sanitizer. We don't use Purell. But we do make our own chemical free hand sanitizer. We don't use any of those antibacterial products. And we believe, you know, if you have a strong immune system, you know, you can fight it all off. We're living now we didn't mention this, but we moved to the Yucatan. And if you've been to Mexico. Mexico, if you've been here, you know that in most of the bathroom and kitchen sinks, they don't have hot water. It's not the most sanitary bathroom conditions, but we're mm-hmm. all alive and well, and we're doing just fine because we really, really work on keeping our immune systems, you know, high and strong, and it can be done. You know, it takes work but it can be done. Yeah,
sure. Okay. So I think we're about out of time, but I do just want to just touch on kind of like an overarching picture of our talk, because I have a question both as history teachers, as educators, and then, you know, Vilya, you also as a mother of a woman, how do you think we go about teaching history in a way that is like to our families in a way that is, you know,
that's
the real story. You know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? Like, how do you tell them like, you're not learning everything about this. Like, you're not hearing the whole story.
That's a good question.
It's hard because it's like, you'd have to like totally rewrite kind of how history is taught.
Yeah.
The whole country.
Yeah. That's a really good question.
Actually, maybe you guys could just do that for a children's book.
Yeah, we took Eris out of, it was her choice. We took Eris out of public school, actually the school district where I taught, because we just didn't like the way a lot of history and things were being taught, because the interesting good stuff wasn't being taught. And they dwelled so much on the boring stuff and the dates that it came a point where Eris really hated history. So I think you're really going to have to do it on your own. It's not going to be happening in school systems. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm.
And how do you get to the interesting stuff?
I mean, my parents always took my brother and I to all kinds of, you know, day trip kind of things. Like
you I think saw also it. Like,
Mick and Eris grew up in Bridgewater, Connecticut, tiny little town, 1800 people, you know, totally like white bread. And then very early on, we're not wealthy people, but very early on, you know, on all school vacations, we started traveling internationally. And I think if you start traveling, especially
outside, Kirsten.
I think
I know. I'm a big proponent of travel.
It's a lot different hearing about it, but if you actually see it. And I think that kind of, they're always interested in stuff like that anyway.
Yeah.
But
making it real, making it alive. Yeah. I mean, because here we are with, you know, college degrees all the way around. And this is the first time I've heard about the UGGs for UGG.
That's really going to stick with Kirsten.
It's really going to stick with me. Well,
you two have been wonderful.
This is awesome. I'm going to get your book. I'm very excited to make fire cider.
Good.
We're not buying our fire cider.
I also realized
I know another tagline for your website. You're not teaching people how to fish. You're teaching them how to witch. Oh, do you like that?
Yeah. Pretty good. Good. Yeah. Well, thank you for having us. Thank you for your what do we call you? Our not inaugural, but your welcome. Well, your welcome back.
Our welcome back to Welcome Home.
We're honored to have been.
It's a highly coveted episode.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, so nice to meet you guys. And once again, give your website one more time for everybody. And I assume they can find you on social.
Yep. GroundedGoodWife.com. And then on Facebook and Instagram, we're Grounded Goodwife. We're very, very easy to find. Yep. And if you're down in Yucatan, come visit us.
And welcome home. And as a very special addition for our guest today, we have the mother of Halloween, Miss Chanel Van Reenen. And Chanel came to me from a whole number of sources. But what makes her the bomb shiznit of Halloween is that you not only do 31 days of Halloween with the greatest costumes known to man. I mean, you are the queen of costumery, but you kind of embrace Halloween all year long. So welcome, Chanel, to Welcome Home.
Hello. Thank you for having me. This is so exciting. My first podcast.
Well, thank you for being here. And this is such a fun little addition. We are doing a show about witches, and we just knew we had to have you on as a guest because someone called you a witch the other day and you took it as a compliment. And also your Instagram is pretty darn impressive and inspiring.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a lot of fun.
Can we just do a lightning round? Favorite costume on the Instagram? And we can all say our favorite of your costumes.
I would, do you want me to go? You want me to
Everybody gets to go.
Okay. So I think mine from last year is probably going to be Ursula. That was one of my favorites.
That was intense. And few times do we say, listeners, you need to go for some imagery, but you do need to go check out the Instagram account. It's Chanel, spelled like the designer label, Van Reenen, R-E-E-N-E-N. And I think that will help you know the gravitas behind who we are speaking with. So you will be able to understand Ursula and all of it. Like, so here's what got me about your costumes. Some of the costumes, I think to myself, like you did Mean Girls, right? Yesterday or?
Today, I actually just posted it. It goes live every morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time in the month of October.
Amazing.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like we get invited to some Halloween events, whatever it is. And I think as lay people, we think to ourselves, okay, like maybe I could pull out that outfit, but it's going to be a little hodgepodge. I hope people know what I'm trying to be. But the thing is, when you do a costume, you are down to the nth degree, perfect attention to detail. Nothing is off point. You truly transcend. So I guess my background question to you is, who are you? Like, like, are you a mom? Are you a costume designer? Did you major in theater? Like, how did you get to this level?
So I actually have a BFA in photography. I went to Parsons School of Design in New York. I am a mom. I have two kids. I've always loved the holidays. And I think once I had kids, it became that more special to really celebrate the holidays with them and to just have a whole new level. And I try to make it special. So we celebrate the holidays like a few months ahead of time. I just think that there's so much to do that we shouldn't just be pigeonholed into one day for the holidays. So we start celebrating Halloween in August.
Amazing.
Yeah. The kids go back to school. And once they go back to school, I bring up all of the Halloween items from the basement. And it takes me about 7 to 10 days to actually decorate my house. But I'm a mom. Yes. I have a wonderful relationship. I'm divorced. I'm in a great co-parenting relationship with their father, which I think is not talked about enough. People hear divorce and they kind of shun, but we are thriving as co-parents. We do a lot of things together.
Wait, here, I'm going to get real personal.
Yeah.
Do you ever do a group costumes?
Who does family costumes.
Yes. That is the true co-parenting test. If you can still go to costume together.
I can get my husband to put
on
like
Chanel.
A crappy little like mask for a Halloween party, and you're getting your ex-husband to like do these intricate. Oh man.
So this year, I'll give you guys a little sneak peek. But our family costume this year is Alice in Wonderland. He's going to be the Mad Hatter. Last year, the family costume was the Addams Family. The year before that, it was Beetlejuice. We've done Harry Potter. He definitely embraces my Halloween side, and it's just really special that the kids get to, you know, grow up with both of their parents loving Halloween and in a really fun setting.
So does this mean you skip Labor Day?
I'm so sorry. I need to stick with this family costume thing because my children would rather die than match me.
No.
How old are your kids? Is there bribery involved? What sort of say do they have in this? Because this is like my holy grail of parenting would be a family costume. We have tried everything and they won't have
it. For Halloween, every month, I've always let the kids. So there's always different events. You know, I don't know how it is from COVID, but I live in the suburbs of Atlanta and things are pretty much, I'd hate to say normal, but they're pretty much back to normal. So there's trunk or treats. There's always trick or treating at, you know, different outdoor malls or things like that. And they always get to do the storybook parade at their school. So my bribery to them is they can pick out any costume that they want from Target, Spirit Halloween, Amazon. They could even pick, you know, two or three little cheap $20 ones, but they have to do the family costume with me and their dad on Halloween. They know that they have to do it for the photos, and it's a lot of fun. And Evelyn, my daughter, loves dressing up. So that is my bribery for them. I let them pick out costumes if they want to do anything with their friends, but then for actual Halloween, they have to do the family one.
Okay. So the real Halloween, October 31st is like your holy grail. Is that when you're like pulling out your showstopper? Cause I mean, I feel like you just did Marge Simpson the other day. That was a showstopper. I mean, you've done.
Thank you. How do you yellow your skin? I'm looking at this and I'm like,
I have a fantastic makeup artist. Her name is Brittany. I've known her for years and she actually doesn't practice anymore, but she always says that I bring her out of retirement. So she does these really elaborate makeup ones that you see. They are all attributed to her. She is so talented. But yes, the October 31st, I always post the family costume. So that is like the grand finale of us four.
That's like the cake on Southern Living for Christmas. Breath. Okay. No, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be great.
It's exciting.
Okay. Let's do a little lightning. What is, you think, the big trend that we're going to be excited to see this year in Halloween costumes? Saw this one coming.
If you can get your hand on it, it would be Squid Game.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
I think that came out too close to Halloween. So the manufacturers can't get it done because if you look on Amazon, it's not on Prime and it's not in stores, but that was on my list for this year. I thought it would be really cool and relevant, but I couldn't get my costume in time.
Okay. Can I ask a tacky question?
Yes.
And I hate it because this is only out of friendship. How does one bankroll all of this? Because these costumes you're putting together are very expensive. I just know like putting together, like you don't what I'm saying. These are not out of the like plastic bag where most of our costumes come from.
Yes.
We're getting very fancy costumes.
Thank you. So every costume always has a blog post that goes with it. And then I cross promote on the blog, Pinterest and Facebook. And I always link to several costumes where I got it. And you would be surprised. A lot of the costumes are bagged costumes. I know it's, some of them are hit or miss, mostly miss, but I always notate if it's a really great bag costume, like the Ace Ventura that I just did a few days ago was a completely
laces out.
Yeah. Completely bagged costume. The Evil Queen was bagged, but I do buy a lot from Amazon. And then I do resell them or I'll keep them.
Okay.
Okay.
So you have a whole system going because you're a professional. You're a professional Halloweener. Okay.
Yeah.
So.
And this year I did work with California Costumes. This is my second year. So they sent me some things. They're paying me too. But mostly I would say 90% comes out of my pocket.
Can I pull out a cool card? So
money well spent.
I knew you were the bomb and it got me thinking about Halloween. I've been thinking about Halloween for a while. And so my family and I, we actually just got back from Rome last week, which was very fun.
That's amazing.
But I was like the costume, you know, the labor shortages, everything, nothing's shipping. I'm like, this stinks. I'm going to go and I'm going to get like an international costume and it's going to be awesome. And it's going to be so cool. Okay. So I researched, there's this famous costumery in Rome called Torelli. Have you ever heard of them?
No, but it sounds like something I want to
know. Okay. You need, it's like a 45,000 square foot warehouse of costumes outside of Rome. They have won 16 Academy Awards. They're probably the most famous costumery in the world. So you need to add that to your, it's called T-I-R-E-L-L-I Costumi. I don't know if they ship, but you need to contact these people.
Okay. But it's worth the trip to Rome, apparently, for the right Halloween costume.
No, I'm thinking you could clean up. This is your like mothership. I probably should have told you about this offline, but
I love this.
But like, if you haven't heard of Torelli, Torelli is your new bestie. Other than
I Graham's. Love that because I'm already planning for next year. I keep in notes on my phone, and whenever I get a costume idea or think of something that I want to do, I probably have over 200 ideas saved. So I'm definitely have plenty for the next few years.
Okay.
Coming out on the 28th. Mm-hmm. And let's say our listeners are like, I wasn't even going to dress up, but I'm feeling inspired. I'm catching the holiday spirit. Last minute costume that anybody can pull off with stuff they have in their house.
Oh my gosh, shoot. I should have prepared for this question.
I know. Well, you've never had to face this question because you have a Google sheet of hundreds of ideas.
This is the fire. We told her this was a convivial conversation, Kirsten.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm trying to think. Okay. So I don't know if I can give you a certain character, but definitely you want to go with something relevant because as long as you get a few pieces that resemble the character and that is recognizable, people are going to know who you are. So even if it's a blue wig, so for the Coraline one, you could easily get a blue wig and a yellow rain jacket. People will know who you are. I just did Regina George. Almost every woman or their husband, or you can go to Target and get a wife beater, cut it out and wear it with a black skirt. I mean, it's super easy. I actually made the Regina George costume with everything I had. I just had to get the purple bra. I add everything else. So that's super easy. And on my blog, I always try to give suggestions for people to make this at home or make their costumes at home, because I understand that it can be expensive, especially if you have several kids or you're going to different events. It's always nice to use things from your closet.
And the blog is ChanelMovingForward.com. So if anyone wants to check that out, you'll get some really good ideas, but don't say they came from us. I know. And that's the thing. People always try to guard their Halloween costumes with such secrecy.
No way. I think it's fun. I love sharing it. And I don't know, just the whole space of creativity. Everyone copies everyone anyway. So what's the point of guarding anything, you know?
I agree. Share.
Well, we highly recommend everyone checks out her Instagram feed. And you have a blog as well. Yes. ChanelMovingForward.com.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So guys, go check her out because you will be inspired to maybe
your Halloween
mix
joy
up this year.
Thank you so much.
Janelle, thanks for being with us. Appreciate getting to know you.
Yes, of course. Bye-bye.
Welcome home.